Just kidding, just kidding. Hello, everyone. What is up? Welcome to the Babyface Heel Podcast. Not bandwagon nerds. I am not Greg DeMarco. I am Patrick O'Dowd. And Greg DeMarco, my friends, is not here. He is tending to some family business, like real family business, the literal family business. And so you get a very special episode of the Babyface Heel Podcast with the new besties. That's right, myself, Patrick O'Dowd, and my new bestie, Miranda Morales. Miranda, queen of soft style, the Twitterless heroine, the woman with more titles than, you know, any wrestler ever had.
I was going to say, I'm getting up there with Charlotte Flair, I think, with title reigns. I'm getting up there. She keeps on beating me. But one day we may come back neck to neck with names and titles.
Well, and here's the deal is, you know, it's ironic that you would use the phrase one day when talking about Charlotte and title reigns with her one day title reign, because we have full disclosure, folks, we're gonna kind of riff about the weekend that was in the WWE. And we're going to talk a little bit about Money in the Bank. And a little bit about Monday Night Raw, as before the show came on, Miranda and I were talking, and I just kind of commented that for about 48 hours, for the most part, the internet wrestling world seemed to be in a good place in response to Money in the Bank and Monday Night Raw. And the WWE pulled out a lot of all the stops, if you will, over the last 48 hours in a big way and in a mostly positive way. And so while Miranda, I know you've already talked a little bit about it, and you'll hear some of Miranda's thoughts on Money in the Bank and Monday Night Raw with Greg on the Miranda Show come Thursday. This is my chance to talk with you about the weekend that was in the WWE.
Well, I think it's also that exciting, the fact that we both talk about it on these shows. I think this is the most excited a lot of fans have been about the WWE in such a long time. I know for me, this feels like what I should have felt around WrestleMania time. Even though they had live fans again at WrestleMania, it does seem that they just, you know, I don't know if they intentionally decided or what exactly happened, but it felt like, you know, that follow-up after WrestleMania wasn't as big as we have historically seen it. And so the fact that we had live crowds at both events, I feel like played a very huge role in what we saw on Sunday at Money in the Bank and on Monday Night Raw.
I'd even take it a step further and argue that the WWE was pretty smart in their first crowd being the SmackDown before and setting a hype bar for Money in the Bank, because SmackDown was pretty lit within its own right, with the opening with the chairman himself coming out to a huge pop. The crowd was pretty much on fire from the opening bell to the close of the show. And I think that that set a standard that then audiences wanted to carry forward as the, you know, for a lot of these people, these fans, this is likely their first show back and they want to show something for it. And so it was a hot crowd. I think Monday Night Raw, we started to kind of come down a little bit from that high, but just so many big pops. And maybe that's where we'll start today. The crowds, what did you think of the quote WWE universe and just how they came back? Not just, you know. Yeah,
they, just no, they weren't there. You know, it's such a good point. Like, I think we get so used to the responses, especially over the past, you know, 19 months or so. The responses are 16 months. The responses that we see online is what the reaction is truly, because we had the Thunderdome, but, you know, a lot of that noise was directed by WWE as to what they wanted to hear. So I think I went into having the live crowds again as almost a little bit of hesitation. Like, are we going to get a true crowd reaction, or is WWE going to continue to kind of manipulate some of that crowd noise? And I felt like it was very genuine and authentic crowd reactions. And, you know, people who were just happy to be there, people who had very distinct opinions about, you know, their favorites and non-favorites. But, you know, it was really, as you said, a really good crowd reaction. People were happy, and I feel like it was, you know, maybe a weird word to use, but like a very wholesome experience to just see people happy to be in front of wrestling again.
And I think this is one of the great indicators of how good wrestling audiences can be. And it was like this at AEW too. Like, everybody knows I don't really watch AEW or follow, but when they brought fans back, that's been an excited and happy to be there crowd. And I think that's part of it, is just happy to be there. Happy to be there, to be a part of those shows. I really felt this, Money in the Bank, watching Money in the Bank in particular, it felt right. And it was like, I was happy.
Felt good.
Watching it. Yeah, it felt good. And I felt happy to see that again. Even though I wasn't there, I was like, this is just how it should be. Yeah. Right? Like, the experience of professional wrestling is completely a community-based experience, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And in that moment, when you're in that arena, you're part of a smaller community that, of course, is part of a greater one that is fandom in general. But that experience at a live show and seeing those folks experience it, that was like, it warmed the heart and was a lot of fun. And it was great. So kudos to anybody who attended the show over the past weekend, because, you know, from SmackDown on through Monday Night Raw, because it was great to see. You love to see it. And I just hope that the momentum continues.
Yeah, I absolutely agree.
All right. So we are going to talk about, give our thoughts on Money in the Bank, and then we'll also give our thoughts on this past Monday Night's Raw. But before we get into any of that stuff, I feel like, even though Greg's not here and I don't have the mastery board in front of me, that it's still time to do something. There's like a thing that would, oh, the dog showed up.
She got excited because
she knows what time it is. What time is it?
She knows what time it is. Yes. Patrick, it is really my honor to be able to hand this to you and to say that it's time to wind it up. Yes. It's time to wind it up, because it is time for you to go to ProWrestlingTees.com/TheChairShot to pick up your very own Chair Shot t-shirt today. Yes, if you go to ProWrestlingTees.com/TheChairShot, you're going to find over 25 different t-shirt designs, all for you in support of TheChairShot.com. That includes, of course, the classic and favorites like the unofficial official t-shirt of Patrick O'Dowd, #SaveTagTeamWrestling, Baron Corbin Sucks, which, man, one day we'll have to talk about that downward spiral happening on paper, because that's, you know, fairly entertaining and almost like we predicted the future. You should actually really go buy that t-shirt, because that's pretty spot on right now. Of course, multiple Always Use Your Head t-shirts, the OG Chair Shot logo, the Queen of Soft Style t-shirt, and Everybody Hates Greg. So go ahead, visit ProWrestlingTees.com/TheChairShot. T-shirts start at $19.99, but if you want to customize it and pay a few extra dollars, you can order it in soft style and wear it in style. So what are you waiting for? Go to ProWrestlingTees.com/TheChairShot. That is ProWrestlingTees.com/TheChairShot.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
All right. Thank you for, you know, allowing me to set up the winding of the winding it up and giving your best, even when DeMarco's not here.
Nah, this is what the, you know, the new besties do. If anything, it was just like a, we hit this little friendship milestone where we shared this little, it's just a little moment.
I know. We still don't have our own t-shirt yet, though. We got to, someday, we got to get a new bestie shirt so then you could plug the new bestie shirt on the show.
Oh, my God. I'll plug that shirt so hard.
See, that would be the second ProWrestlingTees.com/thechairshotshirt I would own is the new besties. And it's got, like I think we talked about this before, it really should look like a morning show logo, like the two of us with, like, cups of coffee or something. I don't know, whatever.
Cartoon faces, all of that.
Smiling, yes. The whole deal. So, enough about our plans to take over Pro Wrestling Tees. Let's get into this past Sunday and Money in the Bank. Best pay per view the WWE's put on this since the pandemic started.
Probably. I mean, yeah. I feel like I enjoyed that show more than WrestleMania.
Yeah.
And even the Rumble, right there with you. Like, it's hard. And maybe because it's still fresh in the memory and fresh in the moment. So, you know, we'll have to touch base on that maybe in a few weeks to see if we still feel this way. But I feel like with the excitement, with the matches, and of course the live crowd doesn't hurt. I feel like having their reactions, again, to their honest reactions to events that happened throughout the night really did make it just really put the show on a different playing field than everything that we've had this year, even WrestleMania. And I still struggle with that too. You know, why the crowd reaction for Money in the Bank felt much more authentic or just different than the crowd at WrestleMania. But it did. And I feel like that absolutely impacted the show in a positive way.
Absolutely. You know, for me, I tried to go back through the memory banks, and I always miss about one match on pay-per-view night. I've always talked about this. I usually miss one match on pay-per-view night because I'm putting, like, it's during Little O'Dowd's bedtime. And so I usually miss, and I'm trying to remember, I missed the Women's Money in the Bank match, I think is what was happening during that. So I was like, oh, great, Nikki won. Good for her. And I was surprised because I think I'd picked Liv, but wasn't surprised. Wasn't necessarily surprised that Liv didn't win. I was genuinely surprised that Nikki won. What really did it for me, though, is I didn't really feel like there was a match that I saw or a segment that I saw that felt like a miss on the show. Probably the only miss that I had was just one that I kind of morally object to during the kickoff, because apparently if you blow a .205, that gets you a tag team championship.
I
had some problems there, and I don't want to stay in negative town. I don't want to go into negative town on that. But that was the only real miss, and that was during the kickoff, in my opinion. Like, I just felt like every match I watched, while I wouldn't say there were any five-star matches, I think that there were four, if you were doing the star ratings system, three matches I would have given very good to, like, four-star ratings in both men's championship matches and Charlotte and Rhea Ripley, which was the best match of the night, easily. Charlotte and Rhea blew it out of the water, in my opinion, and were so good that they killed the crowd the one time it tried to be a bunch of jerk faces and wanted to chant for Becky. And maybe let's start there. Let's start with the women's championship match between Charlotte Flair and Rhea Ripley, because they pulled out all the stops, and I felt like they tore the house down and really pulled the crowd away from their one attempt at a distraction with that We Want Becky business.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think expectations were set low because the story that they've been building between them had been confusing. I did kind of like how they were alluding to Rhea was as smart as she was, because Charlotte laid the foundation for, you know, the dirtiest player in the game in her own way. So I feel like expectations were kind of low because we've seen some I don't want to say random, but just like kind of inconsistent, strange storytelling on Raw. Their matches have been, you know, fairly good, but it feels like it was lost with all of the back and forth segments that we've seen on Raw. So the fact that they just went out there and just had an amazing match and did what they did best literally shut everybody up, you know? And I think that that is also the power of great wrestling, that can, you know, the story that you tell in a ring can overcome whatever story that is written on a piece of paper or that you have on a weekly basis. And that's almost the thing that you feel like you don't always get in WWE, because they put the focus more on the actual storytelling part, on promos and vignettes and even things that they record for social media. And it feels like it happens less and less when you have an amazing match that tells the story in the ring. And I don't think there was no way to go about it. You had to pay attention. You were compelled to the point where, you know, again, that, like you said, the attempts to hijack that match by the crowd were cut off because these two women did not allow it. And I don't know if they came out of this out of spite, saying, you know what, we're going to come in and have this great match, or what it was, but there was something different about both of them and just how they performed, but also how they more of their personality and character came through in this match.
There was a real intensity that the both of them brought. Like they came out ready. And let's, like, Charlotte, by the way, just playing to that crowd, flipping that crowd off, you know.
So good.
Cut out notwithstanding. Like, I loved it. Everybody's like, well, did they censor her flipping people off? But, you know, they've played the word shit twice on replays. But she, like, anytime people want to question why she is where she is, just watch how she controlled that crowd. Like, and how she played right, she leaned right into it. She was everything they wanted to boo. She gave them a reason to do it. And then still came out, and like I said, she and Rhea, best work of the night. Mm-hmm. And it just wasn't even close. And I'm in awe of how well they did and what they put together. Not because they couldn't do it, but because they just did it so well.
Yeah.
Becky Lynch, by the way, not helping things with Twitter.
Well, you know, I get it. She's trolling a little bit, and
oh yeah, she primed the pump for that crowd, though. You know,
yes.
Posted that picture in front of the arena. It immediately led everybody to be like, okay, who's out of Money in the Bank? And then, you know, you talk about setting bars and expectations. Suddenly they're like, okay, we know she's here. We know she's here. We're going to let them know that we want her out here. And so I'm just like, Becky, that's sneaky. That's sneaky. You know your brand.
She's been throwing those types of hints out.
Oh, yeah.
You know, she did the same thing at WrestleMania.
Yep.
You know, she's been throwing those hints out for a while. So I think this time there was that live crowd to be able to feed off of it. But, you know, going back to what you were saying, the fact that both Rhea and Charlotte just cut that out, didn't have no time for that, you know. And again, that's kind of, as much as it's a wholesome experience, we also know what wrestling crowds can do. They can hijack things that they feel like they have the right to hijack. And I don't think they would have done that with any other match. So I still feel like not only did that match really cement that feud, but it also continued to cement the women's division in the WWE, both on Raw and SmackDown, is one of the most dominant in the entire world of professional wrestling. And for as much as fans want to support women's wrestling, they didn't hesitate to try and hijack, you know, one of two women's matches in the entire show.
Right. It was terrific. Another thing that was terrific was, in my opinion, Bobby Lashley destroying Kofi Kingston. I'm going to look up my tweet, because Oh, I know. I think I wrote that was some Brock Lesnar, John Cena level shit right there.
Yes.
Like, I'm Brock Lesnar, when he destroyed John Cena, I'm like, we are watching just an utter dismantlement of Kofi Kingston. And to give Greg his due, pointed to what he talked about the week before about this changed Bob Lashley, that returning to who he was in that identity. Just amazing.
Yeah. This is an example of when, you know, they alluded to this on the Monday Night Raw before Money in the Bank about a change in Bob Lashley, and we saw that effect happen in the ring. And it's unfortunate that has happened to Kofi, because he is so beloved, and this is not the first beatdown that he's had. This one was much more of an extended beatdown, but they've done a really good job of telling this feud for quite some time now. So, you know, we knew that Kofi wasn't going to win, and ultimately you had to figure out how was this going to end, and this was the most definite, dominant way to establish an endpoint for this feud as they possibly could have. And everybody still kind of wins. Kofi is still beloved. Kofi is still going to be one of the biggest baby faces on Raw. And, you know, Bob Lashley is still a dominant beast. He is still your champion. And he used one of the most over faces in the company to prove that point, which is kind of what pro wrestling is. That's what pro wrestling does. That's a classic story. So, you know, I can understand why there were some people upset that it had to be Kofi, but also who else couldn't have been that you were in that invested in? Right. You could have done it to anybody, but nobody else, but you wouldn't have cared. Not right. Like you care about Kofi, and that's part of the point.
Yeah, that's the story there. That's the story there. Is he took a favorite. He took somebody that people love, and he squashed it like a bug and said, no, I am a dominant champion. I'm going to show you what it means to be a champion, and I dare anybody to get in my way and challenge me. Because I'm trying to remember, did Kofi get any offense at all? I don't think he did. I think it ranked right up there.
In the very beginning, there was some offense, but outside of that, no.
Right. And so, you know, between that and his title defense against Brock Lesnar, it's just not the main event, you know, the heavyweight championship scene, the world title scene, sorry, it's not a heavyweight championship, the heavyweight title scene, the universal title scene, just doesn't seem to work for Kofi. Seems to be doomed when he gets so far, and then he just gets crushed.
Yeah.
Bless his heart. But it's such a great thing to elevate Bob as a heel, right? As an unstoppable force, to just be like to just do that beat down, to not be satisfied with one or two of his finishers, to like hit it multiple times, to let it go. Like it was great, and you needed to do that for the setup that came on Monday, and we'll talk about that when we get to Monday Night Raw. The other match that I feel like we have to talk about is, of course, the other title match that took place, that one being between your head of the table, your tribal chief, Roman Reigns, and Edge, in what was another really, really good match between those two. I actually felt like they did a lot of good work building some level of unpredictability to the result of that match at different times. Like Edge getting the spear on Reigns before he could get the spear on Edge, things like that. Like it was really well done. For everybody who complains that Edge looks old, looking at you, Vince, guy still got it.
Yeah.
Still got it and can still go. And I thought they put on a terrific match that was good in its own right and distinctly different from the Bob Lashley match, but still left Reigns standing tall after the match was over as a dominant champion.
Yeah. And again, you have that connection with Edge as a babyface, as someone who's now making his second return back to the WWE, recovering from an injury. He's still very beloved and very similar to the Bobby Lashley, Kofi Kingston feud. You know, you knew kind of how this was going to end. Almost, it still could have gone either way. You know, this one is more a little bit where you could have seen Edge win and maybe, you know, divert the story a little bit. But I feel like for the most part, you knew, you know, the end result, but you didn't quite know how. And we also felt, I think a lot of people kind of knew this was going to be the last match between them. So how do you have that definitive closure between them and still get sympathy for Edge and still have domination for Roman Reigns? And the answer is Seth Rollins. I actually thought that was such a kind of beautiful tie-in to have his interference, because now it sets up this Seth that has between them as well, from the point of, you know, Seth Rollins, you know, threatening to, you know, break Edge's neck. And, you know, as we'll go into now, another feud for Roman Reigns. And you did that all within a match. The story you told right in the ring helped convey, you know, not only the end result, but also now two feuds that...
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey folks, PC Tony here. Thanks to our new partnership with Angry Lemonade, you can save 10% on physical products and digital commissions using the promo code CHAIRSHOT. Head to angrylemonade.net to check out their amazing catalog of products and services. Use the promo code CHAIRSHOT to save 10%. That's angrylemonade.net.
The same person for, you know, the majority of his career, and the fans have kind of fought in waves with and without him, and, you know, for him and against him. And the fact that you had the reactions that you did, Roman Reigns just getting booed out of the arena in a way where he loved it, where it was exactly the way that he wanted it to be, eating out of the palm of the audience's, you know, or the audience eating out of the palm of his hand. And then Cena coming into one of the biggest pops that we've had in quite a long time. To me, it felt almost like if you would have told me this 2 years ago, that this would have been in the reactions of these two individual wrestlers, I would have said, that's insane. People hate John Cena. But the fact that he's been gone, the fact that Roman is as dominant as he is, you know, Super Cena is literally here to try and save the day, and the fans are here for it. And you're absolutely right. A lot of wrestling, when you try to explain it to people, isn't necessarily in matches. It's in moments. It's in reactions. And to see someone who has had somewhat of a contentious relationship, not on his part with the fans, on the fans' part, it also shows that home is home. And at the end of the day, John Cena is still going to be revered as one of the best of all time. And in fans' minds, you know, someone that they truly miss and admire and want to see. Whereas also the evolution of Roman Reigns is the exact person that you wanted, a darker, more mysterious, more dominant Roman. And you're booing him in the exact way that he wants you to be booed, and displaying a strength that he wants you to see. And so it's beyond that too. It's so much more. But that reaction really got me excited. A little surprised, to be honest, just because I didn't expect it to be that loud. But an awesome way to end the match, or to end the show, and such an awesome way to start. Not a middle, not the end, to start a program between Roman Reigns and John Cena.
Absolutely. I've rewatched that 1 minute clip that's out there from the WWE on YouTube. I've watched that thing like 5 or 6 times already.
Yeah.
Because it's just such, it's so well done. And you can, when the WWE does something well,
yes,
they do it really well. And they should be very, very proud of the show, that moment. Did you have any inkling that Cena was even in the building? That he was there? Like, I know he had done an interview saying that he was talking about when he was coming back, but like, I was surprised.
You know, like, I didn't think we were going to see him there. I mean, I had seen a lot of, you know, the speculation online about John Cena being Roman Reigns' opponent, but really didn't know if that was even going to be true, because at one point they kept throwing Brock around there. And so it could easily be like, oh, that's another rumor, you know, take everything with a grain of salt. But, you know, just to see it happen in that way, absolute surprise. Did not expect it to end the show. Did not expect that confrontation. Did not expect to hear his music at that moment.
Yeah, and when that music hit, all bets were off. I think I audibly said, like, no way, or oh my, that's going to be huge. The other thing that's kind of fun, some of those things are contrived and fake, but I did jump on YouTube, and there's like compilations videos of folks who like were recorded watching themselves responding to
commentary reaction. Was that cool?
Yes.
Yes. That was cool. Like, I've not heard Michael Cole that excited about anything ever.
Yeah. There's no argument there. He was.
That was like Mario Ranallo level excitement from Michael Cole.
It was damn, between him and Pat McAfee, like on that show, like it was great stuff, and they did a terrific job. And Cole in particular, for that moment, you felt like he let the moment breathe, right? Like at least in my opinion, like it just seemed like he said just enough to carry that excitement and then let John Cena do his thing. And that is a skill. That is something that not everybody can do and do well. And he nailed it. So yeah, just a wonderful encapsulation of a terrific evening on the part of the WWE.
Yeah. Was it a lovely time, WWE?
Thank you. Yes, me too. Was there anything else from Money in the Bank that stood out to you? Anything else that you want to highlight? Those are the big highlights for me. We've been talking about this for about half an hour now. So,
yeah. I mean, kind of in alignment, kind of the final things to briefly touch on too are both Money in the Bank winners. I feel like those reactions as well from the crowd were just, you know, really genuine, really over. Those were some really good feel good moments. And you don't always feel like you get those within WWE. I mean, you talk about some of the title changes that happened, you know, those were ones I'm sure fans were like, you know, or maybe not the happiest about, or the title retaining, both on the Roman Reigns and Bob Lashley side. You didn't get really good feel-good butterfly moments for most of the show, even though it was excitement, but not, you know, super feel-good. But I think you did get those in both Money in the Bank matches, and I think that just added to the night. So I was just happy with both results, and I think that, too, you know, I hope, as you know, as we'll talk about, I'm sure, on Monday Night Raw, you know, with Nikki A.S.H., but at least hypothetically that, you know, both of those winners get the results that, you know, I think having Money in the Bank should have, and not necessarily winning titles, but just elevating the careers, having this big milestone, being able to take their careers to the next level and being remembered as Money in the Bank winners.
Absolutely, and you're right. We're going to take a quick commercial break, but then we are going to talk about one of those two winners in detail, because that, as you mentioned, Nikki had kind of a big night on Raw. But before we do that, let's jump to our second commercial break. You're listening to the Babyface Heel Podcast on the Chairshot Radio Network, a part of thechairshot.com.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey folks, PC Tony here. Thanks to our new partnership with Angry Lemonade, you can save 10% on physical products and digital commissions using the promo code CHAIRSHOT. Head to angrylemonade.net to check out their amazing catalog of products and services. Use the promo code CHAIRSHOT to save 10%. That's angrylemonade.net.
Are you looking for the newest and hottest in the world of pro wrestling?
Then check out the amazing action on Powerslam.tv, the biggest indie pro wrestling channel in the world. Get over 6,000 hours of the best events from over 150 of your favorite promotions from 20 different countries around the globe. Brands like Progress Wrestling, Evolve Wrestling, Combat Zone, Defy, PCW Ultra, PWX, Over the Top, Shine, and hundreds of others with fresh content added every day for only $5.99 per month. Get your free trial today at powerslam.tv.
Go to powerslam.tv, promo code ChairShot. Get your free month. Again, that's powerslam.tv, promo code ChairShot.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
All right, we are back. Before we get into this segment, I do want to apologize a little bit to our listeners. As we cut out a little bit in the midst of our podcasting, Miranda, and it was by no fault of yours. It is completely, I was following along on my recording and I noticed that it stopped. And I was like, well, that's not good. So about 26 minutes into the show, we disappeared. So wherever we disappeared, very, very sorry, Greg. We are back on track. We are recording again.
All of Miranda's... It's good to not be blamed for technical issues.
Oh, no, I'll totally own this. This is me.
That was kind of my gimmick for a while, is, you know, hashtag Miranda's fault with any type of technical blip.
No, this is a known thing that I learned about that happens with my recorder for some reason, where it just decides, you know what, just kidding. We're going to stop.
JK.
It does. And it just doesn't. And it just stops recording for a while. And it'll look like it's recording, like, because there's a little picture of a cassette tape. And it has little wheels that spin. And it'll keep spinning like it's recording. But the timer will stop ticking up and showing how long we were recording. So hopefully we didn't miss too much. I won't know until post-production. But I wanted to acknowledge that, you know, when Greg puts it together, there will be a gap. And that's on me. So, okay. So, Money in the Bank happened. Monday Night Raw comes along. And they manage to give us another couple of what I would say were pretty big time moments. And again, we'll talk about three of them, I think, that we've got. We've got to talk about Nikki A.S.H. And... you know, we get the Rhea Ripley Charlotte Flair rematch, which is just used as a vehicle to allow Nikki A.S.H. to cash in and use her Money in the Bank briefcase to win her first women's championship, a Raw Women's Championship. We got to talk about Keith Lee and Bob Lashley, and how it's okay that Keith Lee lost to Bob Lashley, followed immediately by what we presume will be Bob's next opponent come SummerSlam in one Bill Goldberg. We'll start with the women, though. How great was that result? Like, how great was that moment for Nikki A.S.H.?
It was a good moment, but I've been very adamant. I talked about it on last week's episode. I wanted to see a woman hold on to this briefcase for a while.
Yeah.
Just to, I mean, the Women's Money in the Bank match isn't that old. You know, we've only had, I think she becomes, what, the fifth winner? And having the cash-in happen just 24 hours after, you know, getting the briefcase... You know, it is excitement, but I feel like they could have done more long term with her carrying that title or carrying that briefcase. And I think that really could have helped establish her as, you know, just getting into that next level of superstardom and merchandising. I mean, that too, that's merchandising all over it. But I, as far as in the moment, living in the moment, it was, you know, it was a big deal. And even I will forgive kind of not the sloppiness, but I mean, she beat Charlotte. I mean, again, one after the match, but also with, you know, just a crossbody. So I get that's kind of her finishing maneuver, but you know, that's just a little of the particular in me was kind of nitpicky, but
what I call that a quibble. I call it a quibble when it's like, we got this like little thing that's kind of.
We got this little thing, but the reaction again, people are not going to remember, you know, the crossbody finish. They're going to remember her reaction. They're going to remember their reaction. They're going to remember her going into the crowd and celebrating, you know. And that is really what's been circulating all over the internet. People are truly excited for her, not only fans, but wrestlers. And it's such a great story. I think Killian Dane, you know, is one of the best storytellers in this, talking about she didn't give up. She may have been frustrated. She may have, you know, had this change in direction, but she fought for herself the entire way. And right. That ability to convey that and share that in a character is priceless. So the moment is great. I just wish the execution happened a little differently.
Sure. I go back and forth on sort of the act of the cash in and when it happened, because like you said, the cash in victory like that just feels like they're not really they're not really behind this person as a champion.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Cause you can kind of ride it away. Like if she doesn't stick and stay over, well, she was a flash in the pan champion who got lucky. Yeah. And cash in a Money in the Bank. Like that's, yeah. You know, like that's easy. That's an easy story to write. On the other hand, I think that they were really trying to build moments and momentum out of these three shows. And they really were looking at what are things that we can do that are really going to get people talking and excited for our product again, both with the fans that watch and we know we have, but also the fans on the other side too, on the internet. In Twitter, the ones that run down every single thing that happens. And I thought this was a terrific way to get folks excited about that, because the internet loves Nikki Cross. Now Nikki Ash, they had some problems with. A lot of folks thinking that it was like she was being saddled with this terrible gimmick and that she wasn't going to go anywhere. And yet here we are now, she's a champ. So yeah, they hate her, guys. They totally hate her and want nothing to do with her. They're looking to get rid of her. Totally. She's on the way out the door. I don't know how long of a championship reign this can be. I don't know how sustainable it is. Mostly because of the gimmick and the character, and those characters usually aren't champ for very long. I also think that, you know, underdog characters, they work like this. It's like Kofi. Mm-hmm. Kofi works better as an underdog. I think Nikki in this iteration works really well as an underdog.
Yeah.
It's hard. You're not an underdog when you're the champ.
And yeah, exactly. I just figured, you know, there's of course Money in the Chase, you know, and she literally had Money in the Bank, you know, briefcase that she could have had the chase and teased it, or, you know, really tried to fight to do it on her, you know. There's a lot of stories that could have been told with it. So I agree that this does kind of seem, as much as it's, you know, being hot on the momentum, it's also, well, let's just go ahead and do this and see what happens. And if it's not over, then, you know, we can always put the belt on somebody else, or especially have it back on right. Charlotte. And I also feel like it was a big deal for the women to get their own Money in the Bank briefcase. And right. Really, the only person who had it for an extended amount of time was Carmella. So we don't even have that visibility on the same level as we do for the men, of someone who's carrying it around for X amount of time. It helps establish importance. It helps. I mean, one of the reasons why Money in the Bank is so touted as big opportunities are the, you know, the spontaneous cash-ins, of course. But you think of Edge and you know, how he held, how strategic he was. You think of Seth Rollins and how strategic he was. And they were very sudden Money in the Bank cash-ins, but you also saw them carry it around. Even Brock Lesnar, as much as people made fun of, you know, kind of his reign with the boombox, that having that identity with the briefcase is something that people remember. And I feel like we are just not getting that on the women's side. We haven't got it in 4 years. So it somewhat feels like they don't place the same value and importance on the women's briefcase as they do for the men. And that may be a reach, but that's the way it makes me feel.
Oh, well, I'm not going to argue how you feel about any point. Like, those are your feelings. Your feelings are your feelings. You know who my favorite cash-in was, though? Speaking of just, like, just people being a little bit different. Rob Van Dam's. Where Rob Van Dam was like, this is when I'm going to cash this contract in. I'm using it this way. And they've never really done that again since. Like, it's really, like, men or women. Like, I would love to see another person. Like, and it has to be the right sort of personality and character to do it. But would love to see a cash-in like that. You know, as I look to the future, you know who I think would be great for having the briefcase for a long time? If she can, you know, keep herself out of hot water with everybody else, is Sasha Banks.
Oh, yeah.
I think Sasha with the briefcase for a long time would be terrific. In that edge sort of way, and who knows, maybe we'll get there. Get vaccinated, Sasha, by the way, please. I'm begging. Just putting that out there. So, no, but I hear you. It is, you know, I didn't even really think about it until you brought it up, but yeah, there hasn't, you know, it's been, hell, again, I watched Bayley win it and then cash in the same night. So, I know what you're talking about there. I was all for it when she did it. When she showed up and cashed in, I was on board.
Yeah, I still look at that, too. I'm thinking of that reaction. I think of her reaction of just staring at it thinking, F it, I'm going to go and cash it in, you know, especially against a heel Charlotte. So, you know, I feel like in theory, yes, it does. But, you know, the fact that this is now a continuous thing every year is just, you know, is kind of surprising. And again, you make a good point, too, a little bit about, you know, the perception. But it's also capitalizing while the iron's hot. And WWE has also been notorious for letting things cool off when someone's getting really hot and either doing things that look like it's squashing them or not capitalizing on it. So it also kind of feels like a damned if you do, damned if you don't with Nikki, you know?
That's the WWE's conundrum anyway. And we're going to get to that in a second. Actually, let's get to it right now. Keith Lee comes back. Wrestles against one Bob Lashley. Loses against Bob Lashley. Internet acts like that was the greatest crime against humanity. What was the WWE supposed to do?
Oh, you know, I don't know. To me, I feel it's a little silly for people to criticize the decision to have Keith Lee lose. Because, yes, it was a great return for Keith Lee. We haven't seen him, you know, for a good part of this year. But he doesn't lose anything by losing to Bobby Lashley. So many people have lost to Bobby Lashley, and it doesn't hurt them. You know, what hurts them is when you change their gimmick around to be, you know, a storyteller with a sword, Drew McIntyre, you know, like that's what hurts people. Losing to Bobby Lashley does not hurt people. So I think especially if you have a valiant effort and you have someone, I mean, again, it is someone trying to conquer, you know, almost the unconquerable, you know, the most dominant force on Monday Night Raw. It's a valiant effort. And if anything, it should raise his stock up as a babyface.
Should Keith Lee have returned against somebody else?
I don't know. I don't know if it would have had the same impact, to be honest.
Thank you.
You know, everyone's talking about this because it's against Bobby Lashley. If he would have had a match against Ricochet or, you know, Johnny Miz Morrison Mundo, you know, maybe Sheamus, but no, Sheamus is just beating people in 5 seconds again. So I don't want to repeat that. Like, you know, I feel like it wouldn't have had the same level of interest.
Thank you. Thank you for articulating what I was about to share myself. This made his return impactful. Like, he came and was like, I'm going to stand toe-to-toe with the champ, and I'm going to go for it. Now, it didn't work out, but you can't, after Bob's night at Money in the Bank, he can't lose. Like, are you kidding me? He can't lose, and he can't really look that bad winning. Like, he's got to look good winning, too.
Well, and even if it was a non-title match, we did see what happened right after, and that's introducing, you know, Bill Goldberg as, you know, what it looks like he's going to be his next competitor, next opponent for SummerSlam. So even then, you don't have time to really tell a story between Keith Lee and Bobby Lashley right now because the focus is on Bill Goldberg. So maybe further down the line after SummerSlam, I get having a non-title win could have made sense if you're going into a long-term program, but you're not.
And you're not. Yeah, you're exactly right. You're not. And it was, again, it's a vehicle, right? Like, there was a storytelling element to get us to Bill Goldberg versus Bob Lashley. I personally am completely okay, probably more than okay, with a Goldberg versus Lashley match at SummerSlam, so long as Bobby wins. Damn it.
Yeah.
Don't let Bill win this match. Damn it.
I'm putting my faith in WWE that they're not.
Because I was like, this really feels like we're getting Bobby to a stratospheric level as a champion, to where he is on par and at a level that is equal to Roman Reigns,
mm-hmm.
to the point where you can look at both brand champions right now, and they're like, it's a wash between the two. Like, it's a wash. They're both quality champions.
It's interesting how they're running these concurrent storylines and how similar they are, with some, you know, difference in nuances, but they also feel distinct. You know, the journey for Bob Lashley is very different than Roman Reigns. Even though they are both very dominant champions, they both have managers. They, you know, both have, you know, looks like going to be very long reigns. Now they also both have two fairly legendary opponents going into SummerSlam. And I feel like it's still fairly much a wash knowing what you're going to see, even at Summer or even at Money in the Bank. They both had very over-established baby faces as their opponents, but very dominant wins over each of them. So I find it fascinating that they're doing these parallel storytelling, but they're doing it very, very well. And I think with Goldberg, I'm hoping he's in a time frame in his career where he's realizing he loses nothing by losing.
Right.
That if anything, a loss to him is only going to even elevate him, because then that puts him now on the forefront of a title match with one of the biggest things in wrestling right now in Bob Lashley. So it helps him make, you know, him relevant again. And he doesn't need a championship reign right now. He doesn't. And I don't think needs one ever again, because he's done all that he needs to do in the world of professional wrestling. If anything, now he can get Bob Lashley to the level that he was at in his prime. And that, I think, is a really special thing to do. And the fact that – but I feel like the consensus is fans really just want to have Bob Lashley win this. As much as I feel like with Cena and Reigns, there's a little bit more, you know, back and forth, I feel like there's a very clear camp of people who are like, Bob is winning this, right? Like, no, no need for Goldberg to win this.
Right. I think that it's a good payoff on the attraction of Bill Goldberg. You're absolutely right. Like, this is all about continuing to build legacy for both of these champions. And these are legacy wins. Over John Cena, a legacy win over Bill Goldberg. And I fully expect them to come to fruition, because it just makes too much sense. Again, to go back to something our beloved host talks about, Greg said both of these should be lengthy title reigns that don't end anytime soon. And damn it, whoever does win those titles, it's going to be special.
You know special. What I mean?
Like, it honestly, a Keith Lee would be one I could see that could win that title, and it'd be special. I hate him, but Matt Riddle could be one that somewhere finds him. But I don't see it. Like, Matt Riddle right now against those two guys? No.
No. No. Like, you need something like Matt Riddle's place right now is more as a comedy act, as a good, solid mid-carder.
Now, there's a lot that can happen in a year.
Yeah, more of the variety show. I think the reason why he gets so much TV time is because he's funny. And you can easily slot him into different teams or different opponents. And he has, you know, this level of humor that I think for WWE maybe attracts a wider audience. So Matt Riddle's place, I don't really think, has anything to do with championships. I think his role is just, you know, to just consistently have matches, to have funny promos and vignettes, and, you know, to keep having some fun clips on social media. That's Matt Riddle's purpose right now.
For now. Exactly. And there's a lot that could happen between now and maybe even a year from now. We'll have to see. But if you had to give a rating, let's do a score scale. We'll do a 1 to 10. How would you rate the last 48 that 48 hours for the WWE?
Yeah. Can I do a point scale? Can I add a point in there? That's kind of how I do my thing.
You do your thing.
Okay. I'm gonna say honestly, my gut reaction, just off the cuff,
8.3. I'm higher than that. I'm a 9, solid 9. If I were to do point system, and I do this, if you read the Nerd Review, it'd be like a 9.322.
Okay.
Because I came away very impressed with what the WWE can do. It was a reminder of what they can be.
Yeah.
The key is maintaining that momentum and continue to tell a good story. And the crowd will stay with them as long as that story is still good. So I hope that the best is yet to come.
This is your boy Kenny Killer telling you to make sure you check out thechairshot.com, bringing you breaking news, interviews, podcasts galore, everything pro wrestling. Make sure you check it out, thechairshot.com.
Since Greg's not here and I don't have the 3-minute warning music, we're going to do something a little different, and I'm going to bring Bandwagon Nerds back to the Babyface Heel podcast and end this show with a segment I use to end my show called Patrick O'Dowd Has a Question. And it has an intro, Miranda. Are you ready for the intro?
I'm ready.
Is mayonnaise an instrument? Want to go jellyfishing? What am I supposed to do all day while you're at school? Can I use your bathroom? Who's your friend? What does claustrophobic mean? You know what the problem is.
So, yes, that is Patrick from SpongeBob SquarePants asking a bunch of questions. I got to give a tip of the cap to our good friend PC Tunney. He made that for me back when we started running with Patrick O'Dowd Has a Question. And so, if you listen to this past week's Bandwagon Nerds, I'm going to basically throw the question to you that I threw to my fellow bandwagoners. We've been talking about music a ton. Outside of Bandwagon Nerds, and we're trying to do a little bit more music on the show. And we've been talking about artists and acts. And so I got two questions for you. The first one is, what is one group or artist that you would like to see before either you or they die? And two, if you could go back and see any artist / musician who is no longer with us in concert, who would that be?
Oh, such a good question. Such a good question. I don't go to a lot of concerts personally. I never really have. It's not that I always listen to music. I think because I just grew up in such a small town, I never had the ability. It was always like a big thing to think about, to go to a concert. I would say I can't necessarily say I have one in particular that I'd like to see, and maybe this kind of combines both of the answers, but this is actually a tour that I always wanted to go and I never went to, and that's the Vans Warped Tour. I always had the compilation CDs and, all of the volumes of the Warped Tour, but I never went. And that was something that I just loved as a kid and as a teenager. So maybe as far as, you know, who I would want before I would die in an ideal world would be Blink-182. That was the band that really got me into music and into kind of my current genre favorites of pop punk and alternative. And their live album is one of my favorites of all time that I still listen to. One of the very first CDs I ever got. And so, I always kind of, it always kind of sucked to be like, oh, when the Warped Tour, ended up not running anymore, that was all of my, childhood and teenage hopes down the drain of one day I'm going to go to a Warped Tour event, and I never did. As far as who I'd bring back, someone that, I had never seen before that I'd want to, that's pretty tough. I would say as far as who I would love to see more for historical purposes is the original Beatles together. Yeah. That is, again, another band that in the actual, heyday of all four members being together was magic. And, the evolution of this group through time is always fascinating for me to learn about and hear about. And so I think ever going to one of their live events as a whole, I guess the other one too, would have been Queen, with Freddie Mercury. That
good
too,
answer.
Like,
that's a terrific spectacle. Answer. Terrific answer. You know, yeah. That's my favorite band in the whole world, right?
I didn't know that was your favorite band in the whole world.
Yes. Queen is my favorite. Yeah, Queen is my favorite band in the whole world. And again, if you listen to Chair Shot Radio on Monday, Dave and I started doing a segment where we talk about, we each come with a different artist every week now, a different musician, and we call it Musical Chairs, and we talk about what we like about that artist, and then we talk about some music you should listen to by that band. And so this is our first go-around. We picked our favorite musicians. He is a big Green Day fan. I'm a big Queen fan. And so... yeah, I love Queen and I've seen them twice with Adam Lambert, and wish, obviously seeing them live with Freddie Mercury would have been a spectacle unto itself and would have been a great memory. So, all right. Well, thank you for participating in a little touch of bandwagon to wrap up the show.
Good question, Patrick.
Thank you very much. All right. Well, we are going to wrap up here real quick. I'm not going to be Greg DeMarco. I'm going to let you speak for yourself. Tell everybody out there where they can follow you, not on the Twitter.
Yes. You can follow me at the hashtag Miranda on Instagram and Facebook. Hashtag spelled out.
Excellent. And you can follow me on the Twitter at Wrestling Realist. That is at WrestlingRealist. That is going to do it for this week's edition of the Babyface Heel Podcast. I would like to just say once more, terrific outing by the new best friends. Welcome, everyone.
New besties.
Tore it up as always, technical difficulties notwithstanding. And thank you very much, everyone. And we will see you next Wednesday on the Babyface Heel Podcast. This has been the Babyface Heel Podcast on the Chairshot Radio Network, a part of thechairshot.com.
Save big money on your next project now at Menards. Update your home with low-maintenance vinyl windows from JELD-WEN. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Say big on gelled one windows now at Menards. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.